You're welcome to ask questions. And I know that Helga would be happy to hear some of your feedback on the film.
I just can't see you.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Maybe we should
see the light.
He doesn't want to take the backdrop away, but let's see, what can we do? Shall we closer or?
I'll sit with one back too. In any case, I want to thank you all for your interest in the film. And I do want to thank the Olympic Theatre for making this screening possible. And for me, it's very special to be here. It's my family again from Tartu. Some of the family still lives here. And so it's kind of nice to be able to ask family to come to the screening. And needless to say, I'm very interested to hear your thoughts about the film and, of course, questions and anything else.
Yes, in the front row.
Yes, I'm the first one. Okay. I know Estonia, I'm German, and actually I don't have very much question, but I want just to tell you that I lived 25 kilometers off Geislingen on Andersteige, and I have never, the time I lived in Germany until I was 24 and a half years old, half my life, I live in Estonia and now I live in Germany. Until 1994, I left Estonia. I never heard about the camp of displaced persons of Estonians in Geislingen. And this is actually very interesting because 1988, first Estonians came secret from Soviet Union to Göppingen, which is the town about 20 kilometers from Geislingen. I learned Russian in school there. It's all Western Germany. Just for people who don't know the area. And I love Russian school, so I got in touch with the people from Soviet Union who came out to be Estonians. And even in that context, I was later also guiding the groups coming from Estonia and guiding the groups coming to Estonia from Göppingen and the area. There was not any single word about Geislingen. Never, ever. I met the information about Geislingen about 20 years ago through one lady, old lady, who has been in Geislingen as a child. But I was absolutely surprised. I never ever heard about that at all. So this is very interesting, actually, to get confronted with a clear and a close history of my home area in Estonia. And nobody ever talked about this. Even when I found out that the grandma of my classmate was also from Geislingen, and she was one of the persons who would stay in Geislingen, he absolutely blocked talking about, he refused talking about this. Just no single word about it.
Well, when I was myself the first time in Geislingen, so I heard the first story is in the last part of the film, Alfred Wellering. He was a classmate of my father's, and he lived in Geislingen. And he told me the story, and he was really longing for Geislingen. And this surprised me so much that I wanted to know more about Geislingen. And he lived in Australia at the time, and he was too old, his health was poor, so he couldn't return to Geislingen. So I went for him and filmed the road where he lived and some of the other streets in the center of the town. And I went to the archive in Geislingen. And there was no information at all that there had been once an Estonian camp. And I asked around, and nobody knew. I put an advertisement in a local newspaper, even in three local newspapers, asking people to come forward to tell about the camp, what they knew about it, and there was no reaction at all. And then what they did know at the archive of Geislingen was that there was a history teacher, and he came from outside of Geislingen, but he taught history in a secondary school in Geislingen, and he had heard whispers about this camp. And so he started to research it. I later talked with him, and he said it was difficult for him as well to find people willing to talk about this camp. And so he did some research to find out what had been there. And he wrote a book about it. And in his book, there are some newspaper clippings of the time, especially when the camp was dissolved, when it was closed. And the Estonians are regarded as very filthy people. They are thieves and criminals because they came with very small suitcases and they left with big suitcases. And the house were dirty and full of vermin and they were dilapidated, which was not really surprising because there were so many people in one house. But I read that at first, and I did research, and I read all the information that the towns published at the time in Gaisling, in the camp, and that's all about cleanliness. And so, because the American army, this was in the American zone, was so frightened about diseases spreading, so you had to be clean. And so this was the kind of opposite of the information the German militants or the German newspapers, I should say. But if you read the newspapers, then you know of the kind of anger which was created by the fact that there were around 4,000 people for 5 years in their homes.
Did you know the fact that Hitler was 8 times in Geislingen? I read about this also in this context. That's why displaced persons from Estonia came to Geislingen, was that Hitler was visiting 8 times the town. And there was also in Nürnberg, Langwasser, an Estonian refugee camp. And this was also because of Stadtteilexpertentage, these very big events of Hitler time that was also actually meant more or less as education or maybe also punishment to Germans of this area. But my sister lived very long in Nürnberg and no heard about this. I saw it on TV years ago.
This is also one of read. There is this Estonian book of Ferdinand Kuhl about all the DP camps in Germany. And he mentions that probably because there were Nazi officials at some houses in Geislingen that they were punished afterwards. But the fact that they had summer houses was not true, but that it became, even before there was a Reichskanzler to Geislingen, that's very true. And I tried to find out and tried to find documents. And Geislingen, before the camp was organized, there was the UNRWA, so the refugee organization. You had the army, then you had the military administration, and they all had separate archives. And the UNRWA came to Geislingen in end of April 1945, and they had to write a monthly report as well as the army, the 5th Army and the 1st Army, which was there. And I have it about the months, April, May, June, July, August, September, no October, then November, December. And in October, the camp was created, and I couldn't find the documents. And people have looked for me in the National American Archive, and tried to find it in German archives, but in the German archives there was nothing because it was American zone and they took the papers with them. I know by finding a document about a council meeting when the camp was closed, that there had been a council meeting when the camp was created. But I have not been able to find it, and I have no idea where it was, because it's not in the archives where it should have been, in chronological order. But what I do know is that in the first advising, there were 6 small camps around the town, but these were in barracks, anywhere. These were very dilapidated, so they said, these will not be, people can't live there when the winter is coming. And then in the summer of 1945, there was a report written for the American government. This was called the Harrison Report. And it stated that, especially for the Jewish refugees, they were still living in the same camps, in the same concentration camps and work camps, as they were forced to live during the war. So something needed to be done by this. And then President Truman reacted with kind of other report, or I should say order, that refugees needed to be housed in proper good buildings. And this should be private buildings when needed. And that because the Germans had started the war, they needed to be punished or suffer. And General Eisenhower made a trip around the American zone to see where they could find these buildings. And Geisinger was not bombed, and so there was no damage at all. So this was a place where private houses could be taken. And so it seems more to me that this was following from this Harrison report and from looking for proper housing that Geisinger was chosen, and not as much as punishment. Because you see in several, there's Hochfeld in Augsburg or near Augsburg. There were also private houses taken. In the French zone, they took most of the private houses. And so it was more dependent on where there were actually houses which could be taken. But I'm not sure because I've not been able to find it.
Thank you very much.
Other questions?
I can't see questions.
I can't see you very clearly because of the spotlight. But...
Are you on screen as well because you can't see?
Yes. Speak up.
How did you find these persons who are participating in this film?
When I started the research into Geisingen, it was first the outside of my father who had lived there and knew other people. And so, as Arlette Bach says in the film, Estonians always find where the other Estonians are, so the word spread. And then I found more people. And my mother, she collected stories from the younger group of children who were in Geisingen. And she gathered the stories and could give me names of people who would be able to participate in the film. And well, not everybody wanted to be in the film. And then I made quite a few interviews or organized that interviews could be made. And then finally, I made a choice that I wanted to have people from different age groups and men as well as women. And this is the way it worked.
Other questions or comments? The people from Geislingen who had been in the camp, I think Arvid Lux was one of the activists for it, put together a book or at least one album in a kind of memorial, thinking back 50 years or that length. And I'm wondering whether you had a sense that the Estonians who had been there had retained their ties, the ties that they had as a community, besides the ties they would have with their relatives. Was there a sense of a kind of class reunion aspect? Or was there more of a sense that was suggested in the movie several times of people moving on, people having had this chapter of their lives, but then, like the birds without feet, they had to keep moving? What was your sense of that?
I know that, like Mal Blumfeld says in the film, there was a town in the United States, in Atlantic, and there a lot of Estonians came to work. There was work, and so they felt like, okay, we know a lot of people we had already known in Geisingen, and here we are again. But they didn't keep in contact like a whole group of people in Australia and in Canada and some in United Kingdom. And so it was more that when they met each other again and they think, okay, I've known you. And so it was another type of friendship because they knew where they were coming from and what they had went through. And but not a small group. Mm-hmm. And it was a small group when there was a reunion in 2008, mm-hmm. that he came to Geisingen, but in fact, it was a small group.
Yeah, yeah.
And the interesting thing is that then the mayor of Geisinger heard about it, that Turin was coming, and they were received by the mayor, and there were stories in the newspapers. So the older generation didn't want to talk about it, they didn't want to know about it, but the younger generation, it's quite different. They want to know now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And the snowball effect of finding one person and then finding the next person and finding the next person, did that help close some of the gaps that were due to the documentary evidence being scattered or suppressed? Or were you able to use the stories of people to fill in some of those gaps?
No, because they were all children. And so the way you look at what has taken place in the camp is a very different way than what the parents went through. So in the information by the times I read about the use of electricity and the use of firewood, and this was very limited. And there was, of course, the use of gas. And there were in the house a lot of families, but they should not use more gas or electricity above a certain limit. And when this was done, then they were cut off, then the whole house was cut off. Mm-hmm. And when there was a severe winter, in the news, in the information of the times, it was said that a lot of houses were cut off because they had been using too much electricity and too much gas. So I've asked all the children, what was it like? You know, did you use lots of wood, but you were not able to get all the wood that was limited as well? Mm-hmm. And nobody remembered. And I think that the parents would have known. But then you see that the world of child is very different from a parent. And in the film, I tried by using the information which I found in all the documents, to have a little bit of voice or the information of an adult person, but okay. Their view was a different one. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Please.
I, as a German, I feel at the moment a very, very strange movement in Estonia that 3 years ago got told that Estonia has to take about 300 refugees decided by European Union politicians, and since then I have to confess that I don't feel that safe in Estonia anymore, as I, as German, got threatened. Really threatened, and mostly by men, elder me. I got attacked in a shop, and even security men was watching it and not taking party on that. And I feel also that as a German, I get ordered out. So people very suddenly, when this happened, that that refugees should come to Estonia, got a very big campaign that they will rape all your children, they will rape all your wives, they will kill all you, as whatever the right people know to say about such things. And I lost very many, I don't know if all the friends whom I knew 20 years and longer, even the time I didn't speak Estonian yet. And I have lost them until now. They have absolutely gone out of my life. They didn't answer the phone anymore, they didn't open the door anymore, they didn't greet me in the shop anymore. And so the atmosphere in Estonia got very, for me as a foreigner, and I don't know how Estonians around me feel on that, and I guess people who come from visiting this film anyway wouldn't agree with people who were absolutely threatening to me. And I have a feeling that the atmosphere in Estonia got very fragile, that the society in Estonia is not strong enough to take 10 refugees. People are not keeping together, as I see now in Geislingen. People were working together, keeping together, dancing together. I have a feeling that people are, and this might be of Soviet time, as I come from Eastern Germany, I can't really cope with that. People are afraid of each other, mistrusting each other, envying each other. each other. And it's like sometimes like walking on very thin ice on a big lake, talking with people about this topic, refugees, and that actually shouldn't be a problem for Estonians. We are the first, I mean, sorry, yes. But will this film be shown to a larger audience? I'm really surprised that so few people are interested in that, because I came as one of the first, because I was afraid I won't get a place in the cinema, and now I see it. I actually could lie on the benches. Will this film be shown again in certain events, or are there plans? Because I think it's a very educating film about you are never at home when you think you are at home.
It's going to be broadcast on television on the 24th of February, on a very early time. It's 8 o'clock, but then it will be possible to view it online, I think. And there will be a celebration in September of 75 years of the big flight, and then it will be screened as well. And what for me is interesting, because I hope the stories told in the film will find a broader audience, it will be screened in the Europarliament in Brussels in April as well. And for the rest, I'm not living in Estonia, and so that it's hard for me to comment on how the atmosphere here is.
Yes, of course.
As the child of refugees who were not in Gleisingen, but who were in Germany, both my parents, and later resettled in the US, where I grew up, and I've been living in Estonia for almost 15 years now. My first response to your question concerning the fragility of the atmosphere here, it really does seem extremely cruelly ironic that having had so many people flee, one can't look at one's neighbor from somewhere far away and regard that person as worthy of being treated as a human being and offered the hospitality that their own countrymen would have hoped for back in those days, at the end of 1944. I think, just briefly, I would say that the refugees of 1944 have been, at this point, under a layer of other kinds of historical topics, that they only are acknowledged and at these kinds of 75th marker, 60th marker, from the event. And that history does not inform the kind of present tense that's concerning accepting refugees in one's midst. And personally, I'm really, really sad to hear that you have experienced that kind of inhospitality and intolerance here. But I think as films such as this one so evocatively open these experiences from the eyes of children, perhaps there is a thicker ground for an empathic response to the larger crisis, seeing that to be a refugee is to be human, as in the first quotation in the film. So I can only hope that such films will move those mountains in people's souls.
Yes, and I think what Abu Anwar says in the film, that nobody wanted to have us. And this is a kind of thing which is which you see over and over when there is when refugees are coming in. And at the time, so Great Britain was the first who tried to open the doors for refugees from Germany, not out of a kind of humanitarian act, but because they were needing workers for the mines, especially for agriculture, and the women for cleaners and nurses. But then to be able to get the people accepted in a society, there was a large debate in the House of Lords, because the refugees were all seen as criminals. And in America, the whole debate was not very different. And they were in need of especially manpower so to speak, because so many people, so many men had passed away. But they were very frightened of people from Eastern Europe and especially intellectuals. And though they knew theoretically that they fled communism, they were very afraid that they would bring in perhaps not communism, but kind of revolution, and you never knew. And the UN made a whole film to get the audience just to the idea that refugees were coming in, and pointing out that the fear was that these people were criminals and would take all the jobs that would be there, that this that they were all human beings, so to speak, and that the fear was perhaps not just to have that for the people coming, but the kind of fear of the unknown, of the people who were unknown, that was very big. And so in Australia, the first wave of refugees were people from the Baltic countries, and then Polish people could come, but then the people didn't know the Polish people, so they said, well, these are also Baltic people, and so they were more easily accepted.
We have heard so many critical words concerning these things happening today in Estonia, we as being against so many refugees, but I think we simply can't compare these two agents. These are, after war refugees are not the same as coming here now, to understand. The situations are a bit different, and Estonians can understand this, but I think that those people who have come here and who are not Estonians can't understand our feelings, because we are not against other people. We are absolutely against you, but we are also afraid of those people coming here, just as they were afraid of Polish people and all these people who were coming from Europe and Eastern Europe. We are just as much afraid of these people coming here. We don't know who they are. Do you understand us?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people who have come here in Estonia during Russian times. We have suffered a lot because of them. And just it's the same reason we are afraid of that those people coming here that are not of our culture, that are absolutely different of us. And there are so few of us Estonians that we can't just survive.
So there's another fear where it refers
yes.
to.
I think we are afraid of them. Not we are poor and we are bad people. We are just afraid.
We're almost out of time. In fact, we have about 1 minute left for the discussion. Has anyone been sparked to make a comment or ask one more question before we have to go on to the next film on Electric Theatre's program for tonight?
Do you have any plans? What will be your next
Well, I've got several plans, and one is about the 600 Estonians, where Thomas Parker told about who went to Seabrook Farms. Mm-hmm. And this was a very large farm, and they could come there, but the work was incredibly harsh. And so it's about the thin line of helping people and making use of people and making abuse of people. And for the parents, it was important that the children didn't grow up in bitterness and anger. And so it's about the attitude of the people who gave the work and the attitude of the parents to cope with the work and the attitude of the children who grew up with this. So this is one thing I would like to work on, and then there's another thing that I would like to work on the second generation. And so this is the children who were not in a war or in a refugee camp, but whose parents were. And for me, it's interesting and important to see what are the kind of stories which are told by the parents, and sometimes no stories are told, but it has an even greater effect. And so it's what you take on your shoulders, and does it make you to look over your shoulder and look back the whole time and walk backwards into the future, or do you, are you able to look into the future and think, okay, that was my parents' story, I don't care, I want to have my own life, or you know, do you keep looking backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards? And for me, it will be interesting to see for people whose parents have been deported to Siberia, what kind of stories they have grown up with, or the silence they've grown up with, and what this has done to their life. For the people who fled the country and for the people who stayed, are these very different stories? Was the consequence of a different kind of feeling of identity, or are the stories somehow comparable? So this is what I really would like to enter and make a documentary about it.
Thank you very much for coming. And I'd especially like to thank Helga for being here to help us contextualize the film and the humanness that surrounds and permeates it. And I wish you well in your future projects, as well as, once again, to repeat, if you want to see the film again, 24th of February at 8 o'clock. It's a very good time to see it again, soon after this first time. Have a good evening, and thank you all.